You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 9th of May. We'll touch on the games of last night in brief, dig deep on Royce O'Neal, and take your questions on a live edition, on a Thursday edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it an enjoyable day for you for 30 minutes, as well as a better time to be a fan of your favorite team, the Utah Jazz. The show is available on the Himalaya app. They just updated it. It's got some new features, so check it out, the brand new Himalaya app. Subscribe and follow Locked On Jazz, as well as on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. And when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Jazz. I have to tell you a quick funny. So my wife, you know, I do this in my home office, and then my wife is often sitting over at the kitchen table in the morning doing her stuff before she's out on her day. And if I do it early enough, hopefully they don't hear it because they're still asleep. But if I do it this time, they hear. And so for the first time in what has it been, I think 8 years since we started this show, maybe nine, I said, all right, I got to go do the show. And she looks at me and she goes, ba-dum-bum-bum-bum. First time ever. She just mocked me on the stupid drum roll. For those who don't know the story on that, when we started like 8 or 9 years ago, I made a joke about how we had no production. We had nothing to the show. We were just kind of throwing this thing together. And so I did that. And then it has never stopped. It literally, the first show ever, if you go find it on YouTube, I'm like, all right, we're just gonna have a cup of coffee together. We'll hang out. We had no idea what we were doing. So, that's how this thing evolved. Locked On NBA today. I've got Kevin Pelton. We recorded it last night right after the Warriors game at midnight. So feel free to check that out. It's a pretty good show. We touched on a lot of things. Few quick thoughts. It's interesting to me when we look at Boston and Milwaukee. And I think this is important on team building. So Boston really, to some extent, added Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving. And we all decided that additions, by definition, would make you better. And they just had too many possessions. They had 130-plus possessions as a team, and there just aren't that many. There are only 80 shots a night. And, you know, there's about 90 non-turnover possessions. And it just didn't work. Milwaukee added one piece to their puzzle in Brook Lopez, replaced a few others, putting Pat Connaughton in. But everybody generally had the same usage, the same expectations, and they just changed the way they played. They added a head coach. They altered the way they played. And they had this massive jump. It's somewhat similar to what the Warriors did, and Kevin and I talk about this on Locked On NBA. When Mark Jackson left, Steve Kerr came in. They didn't add a lot of players that year. So the main possession users on that team were all the same. It wasn't a fight for whose turn it was or whose ball was or who gets to determine their value. Milwaukee adds a major piece, and it falls apart because Middleton's a free agent and wants to prove his value. Brogdon's a free agent, wants to prove his value. Bledsoe's a free agent, wants to prove his value. But they kept it all in the same possession usage, and so therefore there wasn't anyone fighting for who gets this or gets that. I have this weird phrase I use, the rightful order of the basketball universe. You have got to have a rightful order of your basketball universe. Kyrie was clearly the top dog on the rightful order of the basketball universe in Boston, but not in a positive way and not in a manner where you had any idea who 2 through 9 was. Frankly, Marcus Morris was probably their second best player all season long. And so you have to have this kind of order and structure and understanding of where the ball's going, whose possessions they are, how many touches you're getting a night. Terry Rozier's quote after the game, I sacrificed more than everyone. He thinks he's a starter in the NBA after his playoff run last year, and coming up the bench wasn't all right. And it was never was going to be. Whereas if you look at Milwaukee, major changes, huge adjustment, big coaching move, better shot distribution, not a single player alters their role. And that's the trick, is that when you And for us, when we try to alter this roster this year and figure out how it's going to work, it's a little bit of our conversation yesterday about, you know, why I would be pro Tobias over Kemba. Is you bring in Kemba and you're altering the entire structure of that team. And you know what? He's great. And maybe that would be the right move. It's just a risky, it's just going to take, it would take a lot of, like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you, like, if we sign Kemba, I'm like, oh, that's a mistake. No, like, that's a major talent upgrade. But now you've got a delicate dance you got to play. Now you got a really delicate dance you got to play. And that's when some of these things don't work as well. Minnesota was supposed to be so great with Jeff Teague and Jimmy Butler and Andrew Wiggins and Taj Gibson and Karl Anthony Towns and Derrick Rose. And no, that's too many possessions. Guys aren't happy. And it eventually blew up. Jimmy Butler can be pissed about whatever it was he was really mad about. What it really was is he didn't have enough of a ball. Like, he didn't get enough time. That's, I think Philadelphia's a little bit there right now. You know, you've added Jimmy Butler, you've added Tobias, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, and, you know, Ben Simmons gets torched today and all week long for being too passive and not taking enough shots. There aren't a lot to go around on that team. And sometimes it's the subtle pieces, by the way. So, like, J.J. Redick uses a lot of possessions. Taj Gibson uses a lot of possessions. Marcus Morris uses a lot of possessions. Marcus Smart, Terry Rozier, those guys, you know, you look at the Warriors, they've got these guys that use huge amount of possessions, and then nobody else, so it works. It's okay. Klay Thompson's possession usage has basically stayed the same the whole time. So, anyway, I think that's a really important thing. The Warriors, that was a championship makeup last night. And frankly, from James, it might not have been a championship makeup. Right? I mean, that James got a little passive there in the fourth quarter. You know, for a guy that seems to be able to get a shot anytime he wants, it didn't feel as though he was, you know, he turns it over at the 6:38 mark. His next, he makes a technical free throw at the 3:38 mark. And I don't think he has another shot attempt until 18 seconds left when the game's virtually over. I mean, that's, you know, if I have it right, Harden shot attempts in the fourth quarter, he takes one at the 10:47 mark, and he has some others. I'm missing something in there. He misses one at the 8:58 mark, and then he's pretty quiet. And then maybe that's it, because then he takes the one late. I mean, there is a feeling around the league on James Harden. If you double him, get it out of his hands, he does not work to go get it back. That was a pretty terrible performance from James in the fourth quarter last night. But a pretty championship performance by the Warriors. So anyway, interesting, I think, in so many ways last night on this. All right, yesterday we were talking about Royce O'Neal. I want to deep dive into Royce O'Neal. We'll do that as we continue and then take your questions coming up as well. Today's show is brought to you by Intercap Lending. That's Steve Carter and our guy over at Intercap, your guy as well. So I did a refi, I don't remember how long ago now, with Intercap, and the stunning part about it is that we actually got it done. Like, that's the stunner, because that's not my makeup during the season. But as we've seen in a million reviews here, this is what makes Steve Carter so great, is that Steve Carter gets the process done. And that's why Intercap continues to grow and grow and grow. It's their relationships and their ability to get things done. Another review just came in from Alex. Steve Carter is the man. He was available anytime I had questions, got paperwork ready a week early. My realtor and closing agent also loved him. He is in-depth about all the loan options out there and made me feel confident about my decision. And from Brad, I had a great experience with Intercap Lending. They're very professional, provide excellent service, kept keeping me updated on every step. I highly recommend them when you need a mortgage. That is our guy, Steve Carter. That's what he's all about. Give Steve a call and tell him you're with Locked On Jazz. He'll give you the corporate rate. His number is 385-885-28, 385-885-28. Visit intercaplending.com, Intercap Lending, NMLS, number 190465. That is intercaplending.com. All right, Today's show also brought to you in part by ZipRecruiter. If you're looking to do hiring and looking to add, ZipRecruiter is using modern technology to make it better for you. They send the job to over 100 web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With the powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply for your job. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon to try ZipRecruiter for free. Then the application comes in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one, spotlights the top candidates, and you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. The smartest way to hire. All right, let's take a look at Royce O'Neal. I'm going to do a fast job. Yesterday we talked about how I just think he's really made incredible strides into this whole discussion of too many possessions. Think he could probably be a starter. The biggest jump for Royce was his shooting at the rim. So he went from 57% at the rim to 70% at the rim. He took the same amount of shots there. 33% of his shots are at the rim. He took 50% of his shots from three. So he really eliminated about 10% of his mid-range game, which was not a particularly good aspect of his game. He shoots 26% in the mid-range. His 16-3 was okay. He just didn't take a lot of them. He's definitely a guy who plays off assisted, right? 75% of his field goals were assisted. Last year it was only 50. 98% of his threes are assisted. That's what makes him successful. He shot 37% on the corner three, which was down, but that means his above-the-break three was really good last year. It was 39% overall on threes. His ball handling, he had the exact same amount of turnovers as he had a year ago, playing 500 more minutes, playing almost 50% more with the same amount of turnovers. That's another major step in his improvement. He did foul a lot more defensively this year. I think the league rules bothered him, particularly early in the season. He's a very physical defender. He's a grabber. He's a holder. His playoff play in each of the last 2 years has been best described as undaunting. I mean, I just don't think that he is scared of these moments at all. He's got a grit and a toughness to him that's absolutely fabulous. He was a much better player at home than on the road, which happens often with young players. He probably is something to keep an eye on. And as he played more and more, it's worth noting his three-point shooting post-All-Star break really scuffled. He went from 44% pre-All-Star break, he had that stretch where he couldn't miss, to just 30% in the 25 games after the break as his usage and his time kind of went up a little bit. And he shot less well when he was a starter than he was as a reserve. So you have to probably be a little careful. The release is still slow. I mean, this is not like he's not about to become an All-Star. I just think he could be a bona fide player in a lot of different manners. Let's dig into his game a little bit because first of all, let's look at what his impact on the floor is, his on-off impact on the floor, because I think that's, you know, where you can kind of see, and who he plays with obviously matters, but I like some of these on-off stats and what they show. Overall, on the on-off thing, we were plus 1.3s better with him on the floor than off, and it was really defensively where we were better. Offensively, we were about the same. That was the main area of difference. His usage, by the way, went down this year, which I think is an interesting note on him. He was a 15% usage player. This year, he was down to 11%. His points per shot attempt were way up. He seemed comfortable, actually, with a lower usage. You'd have to kind of keep an eye on how he feels about himself as a player, but that might be where he's going to be most successful. He went from an 8th percentile shooter at the rim to a 91st percentile. I mean, that's like from an F student to an A student. It's pretty awesome. And that's the biggest area where he got better. What's interesting on his impact on the team is that it used to be when he was on the floor, they turned it over more. This year, they turned it over less when he was on the floor, which I thought was an interesting note. They do foul a good deal more when he's on the floor, but the defense is much better. 3 percentage points better, effective field goal percentage. The last 2 years, that's been the case when he's on the floor. So that's worth keeping an eye on. From an offensive standpoint, the team's not a great deal different in anything that they do. They don't get out in transition a great deal more. They're not better in transition. They don't shoot in different spots. He's not that big an impact player. It's kind of why I love him in the starting lineup. From a defensive standpoint, the one thing, we'd seem to cover the three better, which, you know, maybe is his effort and energy to get out on guys. I don't think, and he would disagree with me because he's a fighter and that's kind of what you like about him. I don't feel as though there's another step here in his game, honestly. I think he's kind of zeroed in on who he is and what he's going to be, and that's very successful, and it's good. He would probably disagree. His QSQ shooting this year, it was a 58.5. He got some of the best shot looks of anyone in the league. In fact, of the Jazz wing players, he had the best shot quality of anyone. So people were leaving him open. He was a minus 1.1 to his shooting. So he was basically getting great looks, knocking them down at a high level, but a little bit below average. And then that may have gotten exposed a little bit in the playoffs. His drive game and you just kind of his other aspects of his offensive game, he's a straight line drive. He does not have a lot of wiggle to him. He's going to get it on an advantage and then go to work. And his drive game was not great. It's a 0.91 points per drive, 0.86 points per chance. That's, you know, of the players, that's low. That's bottom third, probably bottom 25%. In those kind of games, when you start playing him as a pick and roll guy, I this would have to be a development area that I'm not sure that is something that you would expect from him last year. The Jazz last year as a ball handler, Royce ran 196 picks and it was ugly. It was 0.8 points per possession. So these are not areas, you know, that part of his game, I don't think is the answer for him. And then isolation, that's not really, you know, again, this kind of goes to some of our conversation the other day about, you know, you want athletes and, you know, if he had all these other things, he'd be a star. There's obviously room here for a great deal of improvement. But it's not something I would expect from him. He only ran 19 isolations all year and wasn't particularly great at him. So that's kind of my thought on, you know, I think he's a perfect complement to where we are and fits in. And hopefully if we add another high usage player to the point of what we're talking about, that's a perfect complement to have in the group. His shooting this last year was really good. I think that's probably the most exciting aspect of what he has begun to do is he's learned how to shoot and he's learned how to finish. And if he can, those two things coupled with his tenacity, his physical defensive, his defensive presence, those are all very, very good things. But I don't know that I'm trying to, you know, when I say I think he could start, I think he's just a really great player to have on your club, in your grouping, doing those various things. I'm not sure that what I'm trying to say is that I think he's, you know, the next all-star or trying to take it to that level, if that makes sense. And I don't mean that, you know, hey, the ride he's been on has been something pretty incredible. Worth noting, by the way, on him, and I think this is probably the number that matters the most, his catch-and-shoot numbers were 40% last year. Like, that's what he's got to be. He's a catch-and-shoot guy, and then if he has to go to work off that. All right, so that is Royce O'Neal. Let me get to your questions. Terry Rozier is the answer at point guard. Really? Why? I don't agree. Maybe it's going to turn out that way, but Terry Rozier would add another below-average offensive player to our grouping. If you look at his points gain numbers, he's always been very negative. I'll check if he was again this year. Right now, as we sit here, I don't think he naturally sees the floor as a point guard. I'd have to dig in a little deeper, but he was a negative one points gain player. You put him and Donovan in the backcourt together, unless one of them changes their offensive efficiency dramatically, I kind of think Donovan probably will. But I'm not convinced I think Terry Rozier will. I think he was negative the year before, too. You're going to have a tough time. I mean, just on this, he His possession usage, he doesn't go to the free throw line at all. Only 5% of his possessions last year. He shot 43% of them as three. He was an average three-point shooter. So I'm not I think he's fine. I'm not convinced that he is a per se starting NBA point guard, actually. So I don't know. I mean, his regular season, I'm pulling up some of his shooting numbers. Catch and shoot, he's 37%. Off the bounce, he's 32%. We'd have to pull up some of his kind of isolation numbers and things of that nature. But I think that there's a lot of hype there. Kevin Pelton and I discussed the question of whether or not it was bad chemistry or not as good a team. And I think there's a combination of both that takes place in that conversation about the Celtics. But I think there's a bunch of players there that are valued a little higher than otherwise. He's a terrible isolation player, 0.71 points per isolation out of players that have had 100 isolations last year. I bet you that is close to the worst in the NBA. Let's take a quick run at that. 100 isolations last year. The worst player in the league was Jason Tatum, and the second worst was Terry Rozier. So he's not bringing you, a lot on that aspect of the game as a ball handler. I'm pretty lukewarm here, by the way. As a ball handler on the pick and roll, he's a 0.94, so he's okay. He had 1,000 pick and rolls this year. If we look at guys with 1,000 pick and rolls across the league, that's a lot, but comes out to, let's see, 63 top pick and roll guys. He ranks, he ranks 52nd out of the top 63 pick and roll guys. You know, so I could stretch that out to 100, which is what I usually do. I think that number is 750. Maybe it's 700. All right, so this is out of the top 88 guys in the league, and he is 65 of the top 88 pick and roll guys in the league. So, no, I don't think Terry Rozier is per se the answer at point guard. It's an interesting question of whether you'd rather have Terry Rozier or Ricky Rubio back. And I don't know that I think that's a no-brainer at all. Today's show is brought to you by Homey, revolutionizing the real estate world. Homey is doing amazing things out there. Once there was a time where there was only one way to do things, you had no choice. You were going to do it that way. It was going to be the realtor. They were going to get 6%. But now Homey has given you another option on how to get things done. And that is what I think should excite you the most about Homey. Then you can go check out for yourself what you find out. You can text LOCK, L-O-C-K-E, to 88588. That's LOCK to 88588 to find out. Now they have a simple flat fee, $1,500 to list your house. The Homey team comes together for you as one, working with you in different aspects with their group of people for you rather than the one designated realtor. And what is it showing so far on the market? Right now, Homey is selling homes faster than the market and selling it for higher than the average price in the market as well. Go visit Homey by finding out more by texting LOCK, L-O-C-K-E, to 88588. There's no need to go down the same road when there's other options for you, and Homey has presented those in the real estate world. Text LOCK, L-O-C-K-E, to 88588. That's LOCK to 88588. Somebody asked me what Terry Rozier's per 48 is. Everything I just gave you was based on his efficiency. Those won't change per 48. I mean, if you just want his numbers and rebounds and things like that, that's great, but I'm just telling you that everything he does is inefficient. So I'm not sure that that's the answer. How much cap space do we have this year? It's a little complicated. I built a chart on it over here. So, and I actually should just have this done easier for me. So if we just renounce our free agents, we have about $14 million. If you account Neto in that, we might have $16 million. If Korver doesn't come back, we have 21. If you add Favors to that list, I think we can get up to 38. It's probably got to be an easy. What's our easy numeric way to remember that? So we kind of have, 14 on just free agents. We can max out at 38. And if there's no Favors and no Neto, we're at about 32 with Korver. Hey, David, are there any of the players that you think do not want to stay with the Jazz? So guys on our roster that do not want to stay with the Jazz. I don't think so. I'm trying to think. Oh, I mean, I think Tabo would like to play more in his final chance. I think Epe would like a chance to play more. The guys who don't play always want to play more. I think that's the truth on any team. Will Dante be ready for next season? Should the Jazz look for some playmaker, starting or backup? I mean, I think we just need to increase talent. We need to increase the burden of play off Donovan a little bit and Joe. And I don't know on Dante's health. I would suspect that he would be back by the beginning of the season, but I don't know that for a fact at all. How big a deal are the minutes played in the postseason? It seems that the Rockets and Warriors both are playing 40 while Giannis was in the low 30s. I think it's a big deal. I mean, I think Durant's injury last night kind of vibes with that of an overuse injury. So I think it's a big deal. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to. It just means you're more susceptible to it. Bojan Bunjanovic for $15 million a year for the Jazz. Is he a starter or backup? I think he's a starter, and I really like him an awful lot. The only thing I would say on Bunjanovic, just to kind of, I don't know, not like calm things or just be aware of him, is the three-point shooting is a little overblown. He's a very good three-point shooter, but if you look at his attempts, he's taking 4.8 a game, which really means he's picking and choosing when he wants it. He doesn't go to the line a lot, but he was so tremendously efficient last year at 49% shooting, 43% from three overall that it was all right. He's a career 39% three-point shooter. He's gotten a little better each of the last 4 years. He was certainly good in Indiana last year at 18 points a game after Oladipo was out. But I think he's a starter, and I think he would fit well, and I think he's, you know, he's not an elite athlete, but he's a really nice basketball player, and he, you know, can dribble, pass, shoot. I'm not sure he solves some of our problems of just beating people off the dribble, but I think that's a talent upgrade. I think he can play, I'm checking right now, of whether he can play pick and roll. You know, that I think would be vital for us is whether how much he can play with the ball in his hands. And obviously they made him do a lot of that this last year. But he did not, you know, their first Darren Collison, Corey Joseph, Tyreek Evans, Victor Oladipo, then Bojanovic on the pick and roll. So he was not a heavy pick and roll player with the ball in his hands. So that's an interesting aspect to him that he would have to be more of a catch and shoot, probably drive guy. I'm going to have to watch him a little bit. I like his numbers, I would say. I probably don't know his name a lot. And the 42% three-point shooting when you kind of pick and choose, to me, is a little bit of a – it's not a misnomer at all. It's kind of like how Ingles was, you know, this 40% three-point shooter, and we all want him to shoot more. He's shooting when he's open. He knows he's going to make it. Unlike, you know, there's some other guys who probably hurt their percentages by shooting more. But I like him. Locke, I've been reading other feeds. Why would you do that? Just kidding. Every team that is not remaining elite for looking for help for their respective star best player, I feel the plan to find help is not reasonably out there. Is there a player the Jazz can, who's held back by his team system and attitude? It's a good question. I don't know. I mean, the free agent list is... I like Jermichael Green a little bit, think he could be good, but he's not great. You might think is that what you're talking about, those kind of players, that you're looking for those kind of things? Dan Reeves, Jabari, Wiggins, Porter, Jaylen Brown. So Jabari had some great stretches late, but defensively I just don't see it. But maybe that's an undervalued piece. I mean, he's got another year on his contract, so he's expensive, so he's not undervalued. Wiggins is the grand question. I mean, Wiggins has really not been very good throughout his career. His numbers are just awful. His inefficiency is horrendous. He just lives in the mid-range. He has too many games without any rebounds or without any assists. I mean, his talent level feels like it should be great, you know. And so the question is, after 5 years in the NBA of the same stuff, at some point do you just concede that it's not there? Or do you go pay the max contract and have him and think that you can put him into our system and he somehow becomes a better and different player? His rebounding numbers are 7% rebounding rate. Like, you know, he's not a rebounder for his position. He takes a high level of mid-range jumpers and shoots them poorly. Takes, you know, I think 20% of his shots is long twos and shoots 32%. Now, would those shots just not be there if he played for us? You know, he shoots 15% of his shots as mid-range twos and makes 34%. Like, it's awful. I mean, his numbers are just horrendous in every way, shape, or form. And his talent level is that of a number one pick. And so you get certainly excited about his jump and all those things. But he's not a great ball handler. He pulls up for a lot of mid-range jumpers. I don't even think he's a particularly good isolation player anymore, which is kind of what you thought he could do at some point in time. But it's intriguing of whether or not you would just decide that is a huge talent upgrade. That is an incredible athlete. And, you know, I think that you're dealing with – and so do you think you can do something with him in your system? Of the top of the top 96 players in the league in isolation, Andrew Wiggins was the fourth worst. I mean, so we're talking about all the worst guys in the league. Jason Tatum, Terry Rozier, Josh Jackson, Andrew Wiggins were the fourth worst player in the league. His pick and roll game is limited. Like, these are the things when you look at a player offensively and you're going to put him on the Jazz, you have to decide, you know, can he do the things that we do? Andrew Wiggins is an awful pick and roll player. No one has figured out what he does well offensively yet, but I think it's not out of the realm. I mean, I think that's an interesting name that you got to just do a ton of research on, investigate, figure out if he's got Quinn. Does he somehow different? I usually think that's a way to make a really big mistake, but that's a big gamble play that if nothing else is out there, you'd have to maybe consider a little bit. It's hard. I don't think the Jazz will go over any restricted free agents. Low chance of getting too long on hold. Yes, particularly because you would probably go after a restricted free agent. You're going to have to give up on Favors. Then there's a chance you don't get him, and then you don't have Favors coming back either. So, yes, I think there's a risk analysis on restricted free agents that could be very, very painful for the Jazz. What are the chances of Alex Jensen getting hired as a head coach by another team? I think the best chance of that would be Cleveland. And I hope he gets it. You know what? I mean, the impact on the locker room would be big in the sense that he has the relationship with Rudy, and somebody else would have to build that relationship with Rudy. Have I done points gained on their superstars in their first or second years yet? No, I have not, but I probably should. That could be a research project on Donovan. Players who've gone from inefficient to efficient would be equally interesting. My thoughts on Malcolm Brogdon are he's nice. He's not a bona fide athlete, but he's a really good player. He was crazy efficient this year. I'm worried about how many twos he shot this year and whether his efficiency can be maintained. Is my thought on Malcolm Brogdon. Could Royce O'Neal be a PJ Tucker player? Yes, absolutely. Probably not a power forward or a center, but yes, that same type of player playing off a star, perfectly knows his role, makes all the hustle plays, gives you some grit. Absolutely, that's exactly what I'm talking about. If we don't keep Ricky, who do we get? It's a big question. And it's wider than just point guard. You know, if you don't get Ricky and you get a wing instead, then Donovan's playing with the ball in his hands more. And Joe's playing with the ball in his hands, and you're finding a backup point guard that you like, or you're using Haul more if you think he can be healthy, or you're relying on Dante, who I actually, you know, keep saying I think is a wing. So I think that's it. Is Harrison Barnes an option at a four, shooting 39% from three, somewhat athletic? Harrison Barnes is really interesting. I don't think Harrison Barnes has ever been used correctly at any point in his NBA career. But he's another one that, you know, kind of in the Andrew Wiggins ilk of trying to figure out what is it he actually does, and what is, you know, the Warriors used him as a purely spot-up shooter who never did anything with the ball in his hands. Then the Mavericks used him as a purely isolation back-down player. So I'm not, and I think he's somewhere in between. He's not, he can't play with the ball in his hands. His isolation game is above average. His shooting is pretty good. He's got very little wiggle, straight line driver. He's kind of in between positions. He's interesting. He would be a talent upgrade, and then you got to figure out how to use him. But I think, you know, he would be the second or third option offensively, and that may be where he should have been the whole time. And he's, you know, either been the fifth or the first, and it will be interesting to see how he evolves. All right, that is Locked On Jazz. Thank you very much for tuning in today. Thanks for your questions. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Continue our player previews, look at the events of the night, all that kind of stuff. Fun one with Portland and Denver and Philly, Toronto. Great playoff series right now. Hope you're great. Thanks very much for tuning in. Thanks to our sponsors today, Homie, Intercap Lending, and ZipRecruiter. Have a good one.